Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
Hi, everybody. I'm Hoik. How many of you didn't understand what I just said? My sobriety date is July 24th last year, and my home group, White Rose Speaker Meeting, Friday night, 8 o'clock. If for some strange reason you end up in New York on Friday, it's a really good group. We have a meeting of this format, speaker meeting, not too much sharing going on, but just one person, just like me, most miserable looking one. Me and my sponsor is Joe Caron. How you know to recognize the speaker is like the most miserable guy in the room. I really don't enjoy doing this. Kind of hate it. Freaking out. There's like 150 people staring at me and a parrot. And I'm really nervous and I'm an alcoholic and I have a big ego and I'm fine until like 7:30. Then my head starts spinning. Now you're really freaking me out. Everybody cool? All right. My head starts spinning around 7:30, 7:45. I'm out of my mind. Always trying to figure out what I'm going to say, because you got to deliver a message, you got to be cool, you got to be powerful, you got to, all this stuff, blind must see after I'm done, and then I come up and I'm like, shit. But I spoke here a few times and I have different sobriety dates every time I speak here. It's really cool. I stopped practicing this for a week and I'm drunk. You know, I'm that kind of alcoholic. I would envy people that are part of Alcoholics Anonymous. They kind of don't do nothing. Just kind of hanging out and that thing sober. I can't afford that. So like in the big book says, my job is very simple, to share in a general way what I was like, what happened, and what I like today. My story is just a little wider than that. I have a couple of them. What happened? What happened? What happened? What I'm like today. So I hear a lot of speakers, and a lot of them come up, and they talk what it was like, and I don't relate. I believe that what it was like, it's my personal thing. We all have what it was like. Sometimes it's similar to yours, but they say, stick around long enough in AA, you'll hear your story. I still didn't hear my story. I hope I'll never hear my story. I related in Alcoholics Anonymous, and people talk about their insights. And they talk what they were like. And that's what made me stay here. That's what made me become part of this, because as long as my memory goes back, I just you heard it 100 times, I just couldn't fit in. I was just never part of, I was always feeling different, strange, waiting for a mothership to pull in and say, Auntie, we dropped you off at the wrong planet, come home. That's how I felt. I come a great family. I always like to say that I don't have some kind of dysfunction, abuse, no kinky uncle that was inappropriate in touching me, history of long-term breastfeeding, none of that. Just a great family that pretty much gave me everything I needed and most of the things I wanted in life. And even I heard so many speakers that they talk about their childhood and they talk about and they were very little, how they felt just presence of God and just being okay. somewhere along the line that all changed, but I never felt that. Even as a very little kid, I was just felt weird, and I looked weird. I was about the same height when I was like 2 years old, I guess. I was just looking myself at the mirror. I was like, wow. Down my drinking, my mom used to tell me when I was just kind of physically destroyed by alcoholism, she would tell me that I look like I'm 40 years old. And I would look myself in the mirror and I'm like, what is she talking about? Looking cool. I would be so delusional to the point that kind of physically I couldn't even look at myself with the perception that brings any kind of truth and reality in my life. I suffer from delusion. And my head is what's killing me. And I never knew that because I never knew what's wrong with me. I just had a regular childhood. I went to school, obviously. I'm not from York area or this kind of area. I'm from Croatia, so if anybody thinks some kind of geographical change for alcoholism, after I'm done speaking, if you're not convinced, that's not going to work. We can talk afterwards. But alcoholism is here. You know, I get diagnosed with cancer. I don't have a thought, if I move to Iowa, I'll be okay. But when you're diagnosed with alcoholism, that's what comes in my mind. I need to change. You know, something got to change, and it's never here. You know what I mean? When I'm here in Alcoholics Anonymous, one place I have to look for all my problems and all my solutions is here. But I never looked there. You were always my problem. Everything around me was always my problem. And I pursued to change my circumstances and my environment to fix me. And I definitely didn't do a good job being here in AA. But just a regular childhood. I'm youngest of three and totally loving parents. But the feeling that I had was always present with me. I always have to be in the center of the attention. Always have to just have the feeling. Always have to prove myself. Never measure up. You know, I was either better than you or less than you. I never felt equal to nobody, and I always have to excel. Just kind of like a big scale is going on, and I have to excel or try to excel in everything I do, just kind of to feel equality for a second. That was so brief, and I thank God for alcohol. Thank God for alcohol, because if I didn't find alcohol very early, I wouldn't be here. I would blow my brains out. Alcohol saved my life. Absolutely saved my life, because I was out of my mind. I was out of my mind, and I forgot a lot of things in my life, but I never forgot the first time I took a sip of alcohol. And I had really just powerful experience. When they talk about magic, that's exactly what happened to me. It was nothing less than magic. There was a kid in the neighborhood who was... you guys don't know so much about soccer, but soccer is equal to whatever field, football. And he was a very cool soccer player, just kind of popular kid, and he ended up doing what we do and kind of destroy his life. Just kind of a poster child what not to do in life, what drugs and alcohol will do to you. And he, I guess, took too much of something one night and kind of stayed crazy like that his whole life. His name was Robert, and I didn't want to end up like Robert, definitely. And my buddy took me. My buddy was 3 years older than me. We went out and we drank that night. And I'll never forget that shyness, fear, insecurity, whatever was I feeling, that discomfort was gone after I drank alcohol. Absolutely gone. And I fell in love with the feeling. And this is what makes me an alcoholic. Effect produced by alcohol. I fell in love so much that I always feel like, why would you be that stupid to wait for another weekend to feel like that again? So I just kind of start drinking from the get-go every day. My family kind of makes wine, so just alcohol is just everywhere. We don't have American 21, 18. You can go drink if you're 8 in a bar. And I was drinking. I fell in love with feeling alcohol gave me, and I pursued that feeling because I was okay with me when I drank. It wasn't that I would grow to be 8 foot and bulletproof and great dancer. I knew I'm not none of those things when I drank, but I was just okay with me. Alcohol changes my perception of reality, and I fell in love with it. You know, when I you go in a bar, I don't know if you guys have experience like this, but I do. You go in a bar, music sucks, girls are not that hot, guys are kind of, you want to fight everybody. And I take 5 shots, and I turn around, she's smoking. And music is awesome. I'm in the same bar. That's what alcohol does for me. Alcohol changes my perception from the inside out. And that's what I believe exactly these steps do. That I'm recovered. And I guess the word recover causes a lot of controversy. By no means, I mean to say that I'm cured from this. But I don't hear from alcoholism today. And that's a promise that this book promises, that I will be recovered from alcoholism. I don't hurt at all. And definitely depending what I'm doing in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'm drinking, having fun, everything is great. Start going to school. I was in high school, first grade of high school. My country got caught up in civil war. I was 15 years old. My best friend was drafted. Everybody between 18 and 55 were drafted. What I did, I don't know if this is going to come as a surprise, but I have a really big ego. So I joined the military. I thought I'm just going to handle this war situation real quickly, and so we can all move on. But that kind of didn't happen. I joined the military, and I stayed there five years. And in those 5 years, I was pretty much drunk every day, and I was doing morphine every day. I'm not going to tell you here I was doing powder form of alcohol. I wasn't. I never found a powder form of alcohol. But anyway, I was doing morphine, and I loved it. It took me to the same place. I'm an alcoholic. I have allergic reaction to alcohol. And I belong to you guys. I belong to this very small society of people that have allergic reaction to alcohol. But I also use drugs. But I will never come to rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and introduce myself as a drug addict, because I'm not. My drug addiction stops the moment I end up in detox rehab, or the moment when I stop using. But my alcoholism starts there. My alcoholism starts there when I stop drinking. It progresses. And Big Book talks about that in time, we invariably get worse. Never better. So I was doing that. And being a soldier, I had to do the things that you do in war, and I hated everything around me. I hated myself. I hated the world. And the world was always for me a very cold and cruel place. And I just hated everything about me. There was some seek freedom about the whole situation, because I knew for a fact that I will just not get out of their lives. It was just kind of whatever. But I believe that in every one of us there is some kind of, I don't know, like presence of God, that we have the morals and values and we know what's right. But over that time everything was so lost in me, and I was so, I was just destroyed physically, mentally, emotionally, every area of my life. And I was so addicted to all kind of medication. I was physically addicted to alcohol, and I just couldn't function. You know, alcohol takes the pain away. Alcohol shuts my head off. Alcohol is, what alcohol does for me is far more valuable than anything in my life. And I'm willing to pay any price for that feeling. I'm not here to tell you that I got, alcohol took away this and that. Alcoholism didn't took away nothing from me. I was always willing to trade everything I had inside and outside of me for the feeling alcohol gave me. And I don't know, can you relate to that, but it's definitely my experience. Dignity and honor of bottle of vodka. Bottle of vodka. You know, love and respect of your family and friends of vodka. Bottle of vodka. Anything. I'm willing to trade. Anything. I was retired and I was 21 and I was out of my mind. And what I did, I brought this disease to doctors. I brought this disease to therapists. And I know, well, there's a lot of controversy in Alcoholics Anonymous about medication, about psych meds, about this and that. And I don't have opinion on that at all. And I sponsor a lot of guys, and a lot of them are taking some medication. I don't know. I'm not a doctor, but I know my experience is that you know, when you suffer from alcoholism, you're going to show symptoms of all kind of stuff. You know, I'm an alcoholic, so I suffer from depression. I suffer from bipolar, anxiety, panic attacks, post-traumatic, whatever. But when I recovered from alcoholism, all those things went away. But I didn't know at that time that I'm an alcoholic. I didn't know at that time what's wrong with me, and I know something is wrong. I just know that something is wrong. I just don't know what is wrong. And I'm going, getting treatment, but I'm not getting better. And by this time, just kind of fun was not fun no more. I'm a blackout drinker. Love blackouts. Love them. And all that fun was not happening no more. I would wake up in a blackout. I would be in my car. My gun would be completely discharged. Those kind of situations. I would call my friends that were in the military, and I'm like, did anything happen last night? Well, what are you doing? I'm like, I just got up, and my gun is discharged, and I don't remember what I did last night. And situation like that, I start paying kind of heavy prices for my drinking, but still not heavy enough dealing with alcoholism, because at that moment I'm done, I'm promising to everybody I can't do this, this is crazy. But by that afternoon when I sleep a little bit, then insanity comes back, I'm just going to go out and have a couple of beers and whatever. We were listening to a speaker before we came here, and he talks about the nature of alcoholism. I live in a body that cannot stand alcohol. That's my body. This is what I dealt with. But that wouldn't be such a big deal if I don't have a head that tells me get alcohol. So this is what I'm caught up in. I can't take it, and my head tells me take it, take it, take it, and I don't have defense over it. You know, telling a guy like me just don't drink under any and all circumstances, it's like telling me just don't let get chill at night. It's not up to me. It's not up to me. And I knew that before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, because my mother told me that. And I love my mom more than I will care about any of you guys. And she told me, just don't drink, please. And I promised her with every fiber of my being I want. And I was drunk next day. So by the time I came to you guys, you know, I don't mean to sound arrogant here or crazy, you know, I've been to a lot of meetings, and our fifth tradition talks about every group has its primary purpose to carry its message. But it's not the message, it's just its message. It's the message of the group. And I've been to groups that message is, just don't drink, get a new girl, and move on. That's the message of the group. I've been to a lot of different groups, and I hear a lot of different messages, but they just don't work for a real alcoholic like me. You know, I can't stop drinking. If I could, if dealing with alcoholism is any of my choices, then I would choose today not to drink, and I would choose today to be happy, and I would be home. I wouldn't be driving 2.5 hours to speak in front of like 150 people. That's what I would choose. But alcoholism just don't give me that option of choice. You just don't, no matter, and that was baffling for me, because I have strong will. I'm a strong will person, and everything, I wasn't one of the guys that didn't finish nothing. Whatever I put my mind on it, I finished. But when it comes to drinking, I just couldn't. And like I told you, I started paying heavy prices. I was drunk one night, out of my mind, just like usual, and two girls were hitting on me. This is what I'm thinking. Well, wasn't two of them, it was just one of them. I was probably seeing double, and on top of everything, she was with her husband, who didn't like that too much. So what ended up happening, I ended up being stabbed quite a few times in my chest. I ended up in coma for a few days, exactly 13 days. I almost bled to death. I barely survived. I woke up in a hospital at 3 o'clock in the morning, and it's my parents and my sisters, and pretty much that was the first time in my life when I was done. And I really made a decision that this is insanity, what I'm doing, and I don't want to live like this. And I promised everybody that's it. And I was in hospital for 2 months before they put me in a wheelchair. First day they put me in a wheelchair, I overdosed in the same hospital. And they came and I, you know, been asked the question that I guess a lot of us been asked, what's wrong with you? And I don't have the answer. I don't know what's wrong with me. I know I'm killing myself. I'm aware. I'm not an idiot. I'm not retarded. I know what I'm doing is killing me. But I can't stop doing it. So a little trip to mental institution, that really freaked me out. So I'm like crazy in a mental institution, but for some reason they're all like crazy there, and they don't even know they're crazy. I'm the only one that's there that knows this crazy. I'm like, man, I don't even belong in a mental institution. I'm like, totally insanity. And just in and out rehabs, in and out detox. By that time I went back to school, I finished high school, I was at the university, and then that thought, I gotta leave. Just Croatia seems to be a big problem in my life. Finally got it. So I moved to Italy. I'm there at the university, and geographical cure for alcoholism. Very soon, Italians just become a bunch of assholes, too short, too nasty. You know? I gotta leave. So from spending there a couple of years, I moved to Germany. Germany will do the trick, and the same thing happened. I stayed even there for like a year and a half, and nothing is changing. I'm making some kind of stupid attempts to stop drinking, and I'm constantly repeating myself, and I don't know what's wrong with me. That's the only thing that was killing me, that I really don't know what's wrong. And I always compare it, if you ever left your house and you kind of knew you forgot something, but you can't remember what. Just the feeling that something is wrong, that something is missing in my life, but something that I have to find. I believe alcoholics are searchers, but I don't know what I'm looking for because I don't know what's missing. But just the awareness that something is missing is what's killing me, and I'm looking everywhere. So what I'm thinking, I'm just a nutcase, I'm just crazy. So what I need to do, I need to calm down. I need to do what normal people do, get married and, you know, get house, job, going every day to work and that kind of stuff. So that's what I do. I find her, get her pregnant, AA style, really quickly. And that's what we do. We're supposed to get married, this and that, and I'm not stopping drinking, and finally she decided that she's done with me. She went to the clinic, did the thing, and we were done. And that was kind of second time. They're really kind of, what I'm looking is I'm hurting people. You know, I can't even, I moved because my ego just couldn't handle killing myself in front of my family and everybody that gets in a contact with me, prolonged exposure to me will get you hurt. And when I go to bed at night, my head don't shut up from the guilt and shame, from the things I'm doing, from the time when I was little to the time when I came here. I hated everything about me, hated everything that I was and that I am. And I abruptly stopped one more time. I knew that whatever my problem is, alcohol kind of calms it down, but not every time that I drank that I was in trouble, but every time I was in trouble I was drunk, so everything kind of connects me to alcohol, and I just knew that I have to stop, and that's what I did. I stopped went back to Germany. I was there in university, and I got a scholarship to come here 5 years ago, 6 years ago. That was my choice, Temple University in Philadelphia or University of Johannesburg in South Africa. Always wonder what would happen if I went to Africa. But I didn't. I came here, I'm in Philly, and I'm sober, I guess 6 months. Never heard of you guys, never heard of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I'm sober, and I just gotta stay sober. So I find my, you know, I don't stay hungry. And I mean spiritually hungry. I will feed myself. Give me money, give me women, give me whatever, I will satisfy myself. And that's what I'm doing. I'm workaholic. I'm in school 24 hours. I'm having great grades. I got a great internship in a World Bank, and I'm making shitload of money. I bought a house. I'm in suburbs. 2 cars, girlfriend, side girlfriends, dogs, everything you can imagine. Everything that I thought that I need to be okay. It's going to make me happy. And I always wonder why I'm driving down to school call every morning and all I want to do is turn on the 18-wheeler. Sober. There's not a drop of alcohol in me over 2 years almost. We were talking on the way here that there is a 22 stories in the Big Book. The first edition of the Big Book. And 8 people out of 22 committed suicide. Sober. Definitely don't sound like happy, joyous, and free. Definitely don't sound like that. It sounds like the ultimate act of selfishness. And that's exactly what was killing me, and I didn't know what's wrong. But like any good alcoholic, went back to therapy. I go to temple. There is a therapist there. Talking with her, I'm telling her I'm out of my mind, and I'm definitely, like the Big Book talks about, I'm definitely not completely honest with them, but I kind of gave it the best shot I ever gave to somebody, and I'm telling her how I feel and what's going on, and she tells me, well, Auntie, that's normal. What do you mean that's normal? You had to be on top of your class. She said it's normal that international students feel a little bit alienated when they come to foreign country. I'm like, you don't understand, I'm alienated on a Christmas dinner with my family. I don't understand. I'm alienated my whole life. And she don't know what's wrong with me. She did what she could, bunch of scripts that I didn't want to take because I know what works. You know, but this time, like, you know, over the period of my drinking, I was deluded so many times, just like the book talks about. I didn't know what's going to happen. I think I'm going to handle one. I'm just going to do this. I'm just going to do that. But this time, I just knew exactly where alcohol is going to take me. Because it took me to the same place for 15 years. But I'm in so much pain that I want to go there. Sobriety hurts so much. Now, why would you be sober? Hurts. And that's what I did. And I started drinking. And within a year, I drank it all away. Like I told you, I traded everything. Everything I have, inside and outside of me, my career, education, house, her, the other her, everything. Everything went. And even after that, everything inside that makes me human, dignity, honor, hope, dream, everything was gone. I was homeless on the streets of Philadelphia. And I was didn't have enough balls to blow my brains out. But I was already dead. I was just, my heart was just beating, but I was a dead guy. And on 24 January 2004, I just had probably my usual morning blackout. I passed out in the middle of a very cute neighborhood, Kensington. Very, very attractive. I passed out. Just in the middle of the street, and I woke up in a truck. 2 guys in a truck, and I just woke up, and I'm thinking, I'm getting raped, getting beat up. What's going on? This guy that looks like a total nutcase turns around and says, "What's up, G?" I'm like, "What's going on?" And that guy was sober 10 years. He was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. and he kind of runs this little clubhouse called Last Stop. And he brought me to my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And I wasn't impressed with you guys at all. At all. It was cool. For some reason, you guys knew that I'm the most important person in the room. Like, finally, recognition. But that was my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, just a bunch of dudes, just like we are, saying their first name, saying their alcoholics, and the end, holding hands, praying, just not for me. But I am homeless, broken, dead, illegal. A really bad haircut. I'm like, you guys are lame. I was brought up Roman Catholic. I'm recovered from that fully too. But God was never a part of my life. My parents, my family is very religious, and they are, my arrogance gets me in a lot of trouble. Because I always have opinion on everything, and that's how I had opinion on religion. My mom kind of shook me a couple of times. My mom practices what says. She don't preach. She don't try to sell. Like we are not trying to sell. I'm not going to shove this book down his throat. And just like I would always repent to the people who tried to sell me stuff. Like, you accept Jesus? I'm like, dude, leave me alone. No, I don't. Nobody tried to sell me this, and I don't think that this works that way. This is not for sale. It's free for you to take if you want it. If you don't, though, go to the nearest bar. That's what book says. Just go and drink. If you think you're not one of us, nobody in Alcoholics Anonymous told me that this is about lean on me, brother. When you feel like drinking, call me. No, they said this is program of action, and you do this, and you will not feel like drinking. Not that you will find the power over alcohol, but your obsession will be gone, and you will not feel like drinking. So if you don't think, go and drink. That's what people in Alcoholics Anonymous told me. They told me the truth. I've been lying to myself my whole life. And they love me enough to tell me the truth, and I will not sugarcoat this to my new guys. This guy that we were listening at the meeting, he said, he met people in AA that were hard as nails, but still loving. They told him the truth. And they didn't say, it's going to be okay, because it's not going to be okay. You know, it's not going to be okay. I'm not here to promise you, it's going to be fine. No, you're dying. That's the reality. I'm not going to tell you life is going to be great. Maybe not, but I can promise you, you will be fine. You're going to be okay no matter what life brings. My life in recovery didn't bring too much stuff on the outside. Didn't had more when I was drinking. But it brought something that's completely processed on the inside that I never had and no money can buy. And I was sitting in that room of Alcoholics Anonymous, looking at you guys, looking at the steps, having my opinions, and just on my way out. And I met my sponsor, and he's the kid who is 6 years younger, who don't belong in that neighborhood, who would drive for 20 minutes on the bus, and for another hour over the L to come to that meeting to do this. He was coming there to help. And I knew one thing for fact when I was being a new guy here. I was absolutely fake, fraud. Nothing about me was real. I was a liar, manipulator, so terrified what you're going to think of me that I would always, it's like the book talks about, have my stage character. I always have to tell you how I am just because I'm afraid you're not going to like me for me. So I have to be somebody else. Always had to be somebody else. Always. And he was sitting in front of me, and we were talking, and he was talking about his insights, and he was talking about being the only one of his kind, having that feeling that I'm so alone and so indifferent that nobody would understand. And I believe for the first time in my life, I related with another person, and I had what I believe is a byproduct of one alcoholic sitting with another. I had hope. I had the feeling that I'm going to be okay. And you just kind of, nothing looks okay in my life at that moment. But I just knew I'm going to be okay. But then he kind of screwed it all up, asked me, do I believe in God? I'm like, oh, here we go. And he asked me, do I believe in God? And I said, no. He said, Auntie, have you ever been convinced about something? 100% sure. Who would bet anything on it? And it turned out you've been wrong. As an alcoholic, I was never wrong, but I had maybe a couple of times, 10, 15 years ago, I guess. But I was a couple of times, and I was absolutely certain about stuff. It turned out I was wrong. So he said, maybe you've been wrong about God. Maybe you've been wrong about God. And the second step, don't tell me nothing but to open my mind. And there is a very powerful promise after that. We always read 9-step promises, but there is so many promises in that book. And one very powerful, my favorite, is the second step. And it says, if you open your mind, and if you open your heart, and you take these actions that you don't believe they're going to work, but you take them anyway, that God, whatever God is, will prove himself to you personally. I don't have a edition of the big book that tells me fake it till you make it, and any one of you guys have, but I don't. My big book talks about absolute certainty, 100%. So it's welcome for everybody to try. And I tried it out of my ego to, it's like, whatever, dude. Just to prove him wrong or to prove whatever. I always have to be right. I just have to be right. I was joking with my sponsor, always I call about always some kind of situation with me. And he said, well, you want to be right or you want to be happy? Like, well, I'm happy when I'm right. I work like that. Because I always get caught up in that. You want to be right, you want to be happy. You want to keep an open mind about stuff, or you won't. When I say I know, my mind is closed. There is no room for growth, because I know everything. And knowing, I was dying. I was dying here in Alcoholics Anonymous, and my sponsor knew that. So I did my second step. I opened my mind, and for the first time in my life, I got on my knees. And we all talk about surrender and letting go, and the guy like me don't do that by nature at all. Don't do that by nature. Don't do that by virtue. I do that by complete default. I let go because there was nothing to hold on to. There was absolutely nothing in my life to hold on to, and there was nowhere else to go but on my knees. And I said just the famous AA prayer, God help me. I wasn't reading out of the big book. I wasn't saying the 3rd-step prayer. And I think God is impressed, do I read out of the book? And it says wording is optional if I express the idea. And I express the idea with all my heart. I don't know if you're there. I don't believe you exist. But if you do, I need help because I can't handle this no more. Life is just too much for me. Life was always the problem. I always thought that I don't have a concept of higher power, but I'm using higher power my whole life. And it's King Alcohol. That was my higher power. Life is too much, but not too much. Some kind of booze can help me deal with it. We have a higher power in Alcoholics Anonymous. Then don't bring me too much blackouts, and I actually remember what I did last night. That's always a good thing. And so I said the 3rd-step prayer. I started writing my inventory, and I'm one of the guys that didn't put the worst thing on his paper, of course, because I'm terrified. I'm still scared. I'm scared what he's going to think of me. So I write everything else but that. And I met up with him, and he tells me, Ante, I gave him my paper. He puts it away. He said, tell me the worst thing you ever did. Like he knew. He said, the worst thing you ever did, something that you didn't put on that piece of paper. And what I said, I'm going to quote myself. I said, Scott, if you tell this to anybody, I will execute your whole family. And I told him I was so scared of telling him. He didn't do. Which I can say he did the same thing, but I didn't meet quite a lot of guys. I did a lot of his tests with a lot of guys. I didn't quite see so many guys that did the same thing, but regardless, it was something that was killing me my whole life, something I was caring, and I wasn't caring that no more. And I had pretty powerful experience with the 5th step, but I didn't get the promises
like they talk in a big book, we were delighted. I just was not delighted about the whole situation. For me, it was, I was exposed to the truth, I guess, first time in my life, and I seen myself and the way I live, and I seen the root of my problems, selfishness and self-centeredness. We never talk about alcohol, what alcohol does, but we talk about what me taking everything out of this world to get more for me is going to do to me. You know, selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our problems, and that's exactly what became my experience after I did my fifth step. There's a lot of guys that they kind of are afraid of that, and they always have a problem. They call me, and I have a problem with the fourth step. There is just one problem that you have with the fourth step is you don't have a pencil in your hand. That's what I tell my guys. That was my experience. I seen the way I lived. I was like a big baby. The umbilical cord just waiting for somebody to plug in and suck a life out of you. Like a virus going from host to host, and there is nothing in it for me here. I'm going to go here, and that's how I live my whole life. And it wasn't pretty, because I thought I'm a pretty cool guy. Selfish? No, what are you talking about? And that's why I believe it's necessary. It's necessary because I wrote that stuff. What I thought I'm writing is what these people did to me. I will show this guy what this world done to me. And he just kind of have this way of switching things around at me. Clever. And I start doing what program suggested. You know, I asked God to change me because I couldn't change myself. I just can't. I know I can't because I tried. I wanted to be a brother, I wanted to be a son, I wanted to be a good boyfriend, good employee, I wanted to do all these things, but I was just incapable, just needed power, wasn't there. And for some reason, me practicing this failed life, practicing some principles, doing what I'm told in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was a different person. I was a different person to people around me, way before the 19 changed in me. And I started practicing this. I was really privileged and honored that I was asked to. I hate the word sponsor, but I was asked to share my experience with quite a few guys and some girls. And that's also another controversy. There was a lot of girls that would come to their clubhouse, and there was no women that would help them. That's exactly what was happening. Nobody was going on. Nobody was showing up. Nobody was doing nothing. And I would call my sponsor and I would tell him, like, dude, Steve, I don't know what's going on. And I don't know, am I right? Am I wrong? I'm not here. What's really going on? And he would tell me, Ante, women wouldn't be in AA if men didn't sponsor them. But you have to come with your heart, not with your pants, like we usually do. And that's what I did, and I have pretty cool experience with quite a few girls that took certain steps. And it's really cool. And even today, I know there's a lot of girls, and I'm living in New York. I moved from Philly a year ago. I will always pass. Any kind of situation happened with a girl, ask me for help. I know plenty of women that will help her, but I definitely will not refuse my help because of gender. Definitely not. I never had experience paying some heavy prices for that at all. And that's exactly what I started doing. I started carrying this message, started helping guys. And that's what I believe is heart and soul of this program. The first thing that me and my sponsor talked about, and the first thing that I talked with my new guys, is the history of AA. And it's not so much for the sake of the knowledge, it's not so much for the sake so I know how my society started, it's for the sake that I know what I need and what works in Alcoholics Anonymous. And AA worked before we had meetings, before we had old-timers, one-liners, big book, or speakers. AA just worked when we were helping one another 5 years before they even wrote that book. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is, but it's just some
somewhere got lost, and there's all these old guys, oh, I don't know, it is not what it used to be. Well, I don't know who screwed it up, I just got here. Something happened. That's how they are. I'm spoiled rotten with good sponsors when Alcoholics Anonymous. Spoiled rotten, and they would send me never to them. I was never reliant on my sponsor. My sponsor would always send me to God, and he said, I don't know, to hundreds of my questions. But what do I need to do about this? Well, I don't know, Auntie. You got to sit down and ask God for help. And if you seek him honestly, he will prove himself to you. You will get the answer. And there were so many things in my life that I would be kind of in the middle, kind of nowhere for quite some time, but they always get resolved. And my life kind of started getting in order, not the way I planned it, but I would peek over my shoulder every once in a while and look the way it got laid out for me. And it definitely wasn't my plan, but it was kind of pretty cool. But after a couple of years of sobriety, I got really sick, and I got really resentful, and I was diagnosed with cancer, and I was full of pity and full of bullshit, and I was just a mess, and I was very active in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I wasn't getting better in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was getting worse every day, and what I believe that we carry messages is in our heart, and it wasn't in my heart no more. I wasn't trusting God. I was full of fear, and I was a very active AA member. Almost every day at the meeting with a bunch of guys. But I believe that you can even help somebody when you're dead drunk, and that person will get better in front of you, and you will die. And that's exactly what I was doing. I was dying sober, and very quickly the idea came that alcohol just kind of started looking like a good idea, and the whole insanity came back, and I picked up, and I went out drinking, and it is so hard to come back. And I would feel there was a lot of people that were not about what we were about. And I could feel a lot of judgment and a lot of, where's your big book now, little buddy? But it was hard for me to come back, and I would talk with my sponsor, and he would tell me, Ante, we are in AA, and we do crazy things when we get in spiritual blackouts. We fight, we hate, we pick up prostitutes, we drink, we do crazy things, but we get white coin only when we drink. He said, if we would get white coin every time we get spiritual blackout and do stupid shit, we would all have white coins. So don't feel bad that you drank, you never lost your experience. And it was hard for me to come back. Even when I wanted to come back, my head wouldn't let me back. But I reached a couple moments in my life that again gave me enough space to turn my life forward to the God again and to start doing. Oh my God! I got 5 more minutes to start doing. I gotta get sober again. to start doing AA again that's exactly what I started doing. I drank one more time after a year of my sobriety, and the last time I was kind of pretty much kidnapped in sobriety right from the hospital. I ended up just a bunch of mess. God comes in real shape in my life this time. He came in a form of a couple of Dominicans with some nasty attentions, and I ended up being stabbed again in a hospital, and they took me to York, PA, and I've been there ever since. It's going to be a year and in a month and a half, and I've been doing the same things I was showing Alcoholics Anonymous. Helping others is what saves me from me. There is so many things that Alcoholics Anonymous offers. We have a meeting, we have a big book, we have a prayer, meditation, we have all kind of stuff, but the way I see it, there is one thing that combines everything, and that's a new guy. When I have a new guy, I can't tell him go to meeting if I don't go to meeting. So I go to meeting. We recover out of that book. I don't know a way to recover. There is no answer to stuff. My buddies are always
making fun of me, aren't his opinion. But when I have a new guy, we recover out of that book, and when he do the 12 steps, I do it with me. And when I don't know what to say, I get on my knees, and I pray to God for help. So the new guy is the key to my happiness. The new guy is the key to my freedom, but not in a selfish way. There is a lot of people that, oh, I'm really miserable. I need to find the new guy. I don't think it's about that. You know, if it's not in my heart to help somebody, the new guy will not get me out of my head, because I would be stuck in my head with 100 new guys around me. My head would still spin. I believe we transmit what we have. People talk about it. You can't transmit what you don't have. But you will transmit what you have. So you can use all the good words and good lingo, but we will know. This sounds smell fishy about that guy. I believe we feel each other's presence. And that's what I've been doing since I've been in New York, since I've been a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And one more time, I'm experiencing all the things that you guys promised me when I came here. I'm a brother, I'm a son, I'm a friend, I'm a good employee. I'm trying to do the best I can to be the best I can be every day. And I'm crazy on any given day. I'm not all super spiritual levitating. I can be the nastiest guy you ever met in your life. But what this program does, there is definitely two sides of me. This program definitely brightens the good side of me, brightens the light side, brightens the God's presence that I believe is in every one of us. God is part of every one of us, and I just never knew because that spiritual malady or whatever you want to call it, this connection or separation between me and God would be so distant that I thought that God is not even real, and I think that is the biggest delusion that a human being can live, that I'm so far away that I don't think that God is real, that he would do anything for me. I heard a story years ago, and I'm going to screw it up, I guess, because I always screw everything up. But there was a story, a guy coming to heaven, and there is the gates of heaven and gates of hell, and he walks to the gates of hell, and there is like tables with food, with everything you can imagine, and people are there, and people are screaming and crying and in pain and starving, and the reason why they're like that is because they have these huge spoons and huge forks, and they just can't feed themselves with that. They're trying to push it down their throat, but as soon as they bring it closer, the food just spills everywhere, and they're in agony, and they're in pain. And he walks out, and he walks through the gates of heaven, and it's exactly the same picture. There's same tables with every kind of food you can imagine, but people are fed and happy and laughing and enjoying life, and they still have the same big forks and same big knives and same big spoons, but they are feeding each other. This is what I was shown in Alcoholics Anonymous. You take care of your brother, and God will take care of you. And that's exactly what's working for me. And thank you so much for having me here. That's all I got.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.